The Federal Endangered Species Act, or ESA, requires the listing, or at least the consideration of listing, of creatures that could be in danger of extinction, either now or down the road. The list does indeed grow longer over time, but being put on the list is not necessarily a death warrant. In fact, some creatures have been taken off the endangered species list. The bald eagle is a notable example. Just recently, a couple of agencies proposed removing a tiny fish in the Willamette Valley from the list. The Oregon chub is now proposed for delisting, and that's created something of a buzz in the wildlife management world. Our guest is Raleigh White. He's the Deputy State Supervisor for Oregon with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Raleigh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for having me.
So tell us about the Oregon chub and where it had lived historically.
Well, the Oregon chub is a native minnow to Oregon. It's found only in the Willamette Valley and in the Willamette River system. And at the time that the species was listed in 1993, we only knew of 8 populations that contained maybe a total of 1,000 fish.
8 populations of 1,000 fish each, so basically
total.
8,000
total 1,000 fish. Yeah, 1,000 fish total.
Right? Wow, that's getting to be a pretty small genetic pool then, isn't it?
Yeah, it was enough to give us some real concern, and that's part of the reason that the species was listed. There very likely were other populations at the time, but we certainly didn't know about them then.
When we use the word minnow, is that sort of a catch-all term for a tiny fish?
It's both a catch-all term for a tiny fish, and it's also a taxonomic, it's a family name, essentially. The cyprinids are minnows, and fish taxonomists and ichthyologists classify species, and minnows is it's a common name for one of the classifications.
All right. And we do hear about other chubs in Oregon waterways. How does the Oregon chub, for example, differ from the tui chub?
It's actually, they're in the same family. They're both in that Cyprinidae family, but they are pretty different fish in that the Oregon chub is in a genus all to itself, Oregon Ichthys, which actually means Oregon fish. Mm-hmm. And the tui chub is a pretty widespread species. It's found across much of the western U.S. There are certain subspecies in different places, but fairly widespread.
So what makes the Oregon chub different, genetically or any other way from other chubs and other...
Well, largely it's adapted to the Willamette River, as the Willamette River was probably before Europeans showed up, a system that had a lot of floodplains, a lot of oxbows, a lot of backwater areas, and the Oregon chub just flourished in those kinds of areas and did really, really well. And then when European Americans came and started settling the West, and particularly settling the Willamette Valley, we started changing that landscape and riverscape, and we put in things like dams to manage flood control and dikes and armored banks in order to protect farmlands and things like that. And as a result, a lot of that habitat that the Oregon chub really depended on was lost, and that was what drove us to be concerned about this species in the first place.
It sounds like it really thrives in shallow water, shallow warm water too, for that matter.
Tends to be shallower water, and it does tend to be warmer water, certainly at the time that they're spawning. They need slightly warmer water than, say, right out in the middle where you might find something like a salmon or a steelhead. It's those backwater areas with low flow, lots of vegetation.
Given that the Oregon chub is so small and not people food, how was its decline even really noticed?
Well, fortunately, we have some dedicated folks in both the state of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and other federal agencies and state agencies as well, who periodically are out there looking for various critters like Oregon chub and other species. I think in the case of the Oregon chub in particular, there was a researcher at Oregon State University who had been doing some studies on Oregon chub and a closely related one in the Umpqua River, the Umpqua chub, which at the time were thought to be the same species. And he was finding that the ones in the Willamette were really hard to come by and noticed that they were getting more and more rare. And so that was the impetus for the petition to list the species. So usually it's people are out there studying other species and they notice that they're seeing fewer and fewer of any one particular fish and start to raise concerns, and then we spend some effort looking for them to see if we can find them.
Raleigh White is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Deputy State Supervisor for Oregon with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We're talking about the Fish and Wildlife Service's proposed delisting of the Oregon chub. You can join the discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So what sorts of activities or projects help boost the numbers for the Oregon chub, Raleigh?
Well, one of the first things we did, even before we had a recovery plan written, was we were able to get an introduction of a new population on private property. We had a landowner who was willing to take a population of chub into one of their ponds and create a new population, bring in some chubs from some of the other populations we had known about, and populations that are created that way actually do fairly well, particularly if they don't have any large predators like bass or bluegill or things like that that would tend to eat them. So we sort of kicked off a strategy of creating these new populations on private land, oftentimes isolated from the river, while we then went out and started looking for additional populations and to really learn what it is about, what kinds of habitats does an Oregon chub need to thrive and successfully reproduce in. So it was sort of a two-pronged approach after we initiated that first new population was create additional populations and go find them where they are and then figure out how best to manage them.
So the recovery and the educational process, it sounds like, are really simultaneous. You're not only trying to help the animal come back from the brink, but you're also trying to figure out more about it than you probably knew before.
Yeah, you really need to. I would say the first thing we're always going to try to do is keep the species from going extinct. I mean, that's, once they're gone, and you really can't bring them back. But once you've got a few populations secured and you're starting to learn what they need in terms of habitat, then you can really start pushing for expanding their range and building in resiliency in populations. And that's what the recovery plan does. The recovery plan is a document that says, here's where we're starting, here's where we'd like to go, and these are the tasks and jobs that need to be done in order to get us there.
So you said the listing first came in 1993. Has there been a change in status of the chub on the list since that time?
Yes. The species was first listed as endangered because we thought it was at the brink of extinction, and that was in 93. And then in 2010, we were able to downlist it, essentially from a more severe state of endangered down to threatened, because we had met the downlisting criteria. There were additional populations, and they were spread out across the landscape. And now, fortunately, we're able to propose to delist the species due to recovery.
So what kinds of numbers are we talking about? If we were down to 8 populations, 1,000 fish total in 1993, what's the number now?
We have about 80 populations and an estimated 150,000 fish in those populations.
Those little critters multiply pretty fast, don't they?
They can do very well under the right conditions, yes.
How long does an Oregon chub tend to live, Raleigh? Do we know that yet?
I'm not the expert on that, but I think it's in the 3 to 5 year range.
Mm-hmm. All right, so several generations, obviously, since 1993.
Yes.
It seems like this has been a relatively painless comeback. It seems like once you figured out where the fish needed to live and were able to create spaces for it, that it responded pretty well.
In the grand scheme of endangered species management issues, I would say this has been a fairly painless one. We were able to identify these off-channel habitats, a lot of them on private land, and we couldn't have done that without a lot of support from private individuals that were just willing to take them. And that did definitely give us a kind of a backbone of security for the species. But then we are also able to work with agencies like the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that manages all the dams in the Willamette system, all the big ones anyway. And they were already working on changing their flow regimes for salmon and for bull trout and for other listed species. And we were able to sort of piggyback chub needs on top of some of those other changes that were being made, so that the Oregon chub really didn't have to drive operations in any significant manner for the Corps, which means it didn't really disrupt things for the various water users and power users out there. In the grand scheme, this one's gone fairly quickly, and it was relatively painless.
And so have there been any proscriptions or regulations on people that change their activities, other than what you talked about, making some changes to the dam operation?
Essentially, no. We've had lots of discussions with folks, and I think almost everything we've been able to do to protect either an individual population or a basin has been through voluntary agreement. There hasn't been any need for any kind of stiff regulation or penalties or anything like that.
Raleigh White, how frequent is delisting? I mean, how often does an animal come off the endangered species? I can think of bald eagle, I can think of some wolf populations. I still have a couple of fingers left, though.
Yeah, and I'm assuming you mean delisting due to recovery, because
right.
We've achieved the goals that we need to. Well, so far, 26 species have been recovered from the endangered species list out of about 1,480 total U.S. species that have been put on the list. So recovery is not the more common outcome. A lot of species will stay on the endangered species list for quite a while. We're certainly trying to up the numbers of recovery achievements, and Oregon Chub, you know, hopefully if we can finalize this proposal to delist them, that'll be, you know, 27, and we're going to keep pushing where we can to get other species to that point.
Is there any particular reason why it might be harder to bring a fish back? I mean, this is actually the first fish proposed for delisting, isn't it?
Yeah, due to recovery, it is the first fish. I think one of the big challenges with fish issues is first of all, they're hard to see because they're out in the river and you never really know exactly where they are or how many you have. It's a little bit harder to keep an exact handle on things, but also, you know, water is such an important part of economic lifeblood anywhere, and water also has the habit of becoming things like state lines and county lines and crossing international borders and so on. So the complexity of trying to manage a species issue in a water environment has both, you know, biological components and sort of legal, social, moral components that just make it really hard to do sometimes. And in the case of the Oregon Chub, as large as the Willamette Valley is, it's all in one state, and we could kind of get our heads wrapped around what needed to be done, and we could engage all the important stakeholders in getting there.
You had mentioned twice now species removed from the list due to recovery. Have there been species removed from the list because they are, in fact, extinct?
Yes. Let's see. We have about, I think, 10 species have been taken off the list because they have gone extinct, including at least three that were fish.
All right. So yeah. It does happen. Indeed.
It does happen, yeah.
Are there residual plans for management for the Oregon Chub to make sure it does not end up back on the list if it is, in fact, delisted?
Yes. Every delisting due to recovery has a requirement for what we call a post-delisting monitoring plan, which is essentially a just make sure we didn't make the wrong decision or make sure that some new threat doesn't suddenly pop up that drives the species back towards extinction. And so we're proposing, simultaneous to proposing the delisting due to recovery, we are proposing a post-delisting monitoring plan that will run for 9 years and will keep a pretty good eye on things and hopefully would allow us to detect any significant changes. And if we did detect a change that warranted additional consideration or protection for the species, because the species has been listed before, I think it would get pretty quick attention and we'd be able to get it protected again.
And do you have conservation groups on board with the delisting idea?
Yeah, we've got quite a few groups, actually groups sort of all across the spectrum that have expressed support for the proposal to delist. We are, of course, taking public comment, and it'll be really interesting to see if we get feedback via the public comment process that is contradictory to recovery. But if it is, you know, we'll take a look at it and take into consideration what's being suggested and make sure that we're making the right decision.
So is the comment period open yet, or are there still some steps that have to happen before that?
The comment period is open now. It opened, I think, February 6th, and comments are due April 7th of 2014.
And where do those go?
They go to essentially through a portal on the Internet It's a federal e-rulemaking portal, and it would be a little hard to describe over the phone, but we could certainly give you the information, and it could show up perhaps on your website.
That's what I'm thinking. If you can email us the URL, we can post that on our Facebook page and website.
Yeah, we can do that right away.
Let people know how to get in. All right, so the comment period opened until April 7th, and then I'm guessing a few more steps that probably extend at least for a few months beyond that?
Yeah, the standard is usually that we would complete the decision within 1 year of it being proposed. We're going to take a look at all the comments that come in, and if we get lots of comments, that might take a little longer than if we got just a few. And assuming that everything looks good and we're confident we're making the right decision, we would put out a final decision essentially as soon as we can, but it has to get in through the bureaucracy between here and the Federal Register where it's published. So it will take some time.
Right. Must be a pretty good feeling. I mean, you don't delist the fish every day. I mean, never, in fact.
No, it's a great feeling. It's been a lot of energy around it. A lot of people have been really excited when they realized that we were this close to the delisting, even before we had written the rule and gotten the proposal going. When the working group figured out, hey, wait, you know, we're actually really, really close, that kind of ramped up the energy. And I think that it's a good lesson that when you bring the right people together and you have good energy, you can accomplish a lot in a fairly short period of time.
Oregon Chub proposed for delisting from the endangered species list. Raleigh White is Deputy State Supervisor for Oregon at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Raleigh, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You bet. Bottom of the hour on the exchange. Here's Garrison Keillor.